This is Tom Fox. Welcome to the award-winning Life with GDPR. In this episode, Jonathan and I take a look at a data breach in 2023 involving a white shoe law firm. We consider the responsibilities and roles of law firms to prevent data breaches. First, a word from the sponsor, Ethico.
In the intricate world of ethics and compliance, each second is precious, and slow case closures are more than just delays, they're missed opportunities. Enter Ethico. Our solution revolutionizes case management, cutting case closure times in half and turning every challenge into a chance for improvement. Imagine a workspace where efficiency and compliance coexist harmoniously. Don't just dream of faster resolutions, make it your reality. Visit ethico.com/CPN today to book a demo and dive into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, 2023, The Year in Compliance. Empower your team with the tools they deserve.
Hello, everyone. Tom Fox back again with Jonathan Armstrong for another episode of the award-winning Life with GDPR. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Jonathan, we get to talk about one of my favorite punching bags, big law. And a big law firm got in trouble for a data breach in the United Kingdom. The ICO thanked them, as we would say, gently, perhaps. Nevertheless, clearly, Quarterly Compliance has written about this. Tell us about the law firm and the mistakes they made, and perhaps some of the lessons we might derive from this going forward.
Yeah, sure. Happy to, Tom. They're not a huge law firm, but they're certainly well known in the northeast of England, where I originate from. And this concerns a data breach on the law firm's own systems. Now, I start by saying that this is obviously an area where we're seeing more and more concern. Some ransomware gangs are specifically targeting law firms, some nation state hackers are attacking law firms because they believe that often they're the soft underbelly to get information on clients. And indeed, the day we're recording this, Allen and Overy, one of the largest law firms, is also seemingly under attack as we speak. And I was privileged to speak at the New York State Bar event in Mexico a couple of weeks ago with an excellent panel led by Drew Jaglom. And we've had similar panels now in Japan, in the UK, in the US, in Mexico, in Canada. And it's always one of the most popular panels at the conference, where we look at the legal and professional responsibilities of lawyers to prevent cyber attacks. And as you'll know, Tom, in New York, for example, it's a mandatory part of a lawyer's continuing education now. So what happened in this case? As we've said, there have been clear warnings from our professional regulator and also from GCHQ of this trend of people attacking law firms. And here, there was apparently a compromise of the law firm system through what's called a spear phishing attack. This is an attack where an individual within the law firm is specifically targeted. And effectively, what then happened is four fraudulent payments were made, basically money being diverted to a fraudster's bank account rather than where it should have been. And the law firm did the right thing. Initially, they appointed an independent cybersecurity firm. As soon as they saw what was happening, they caught it, I wouldn't say live, but only 3 days after the initial exploit. And they changed the password on that account almost immediately that the independent cybersecurity firm was brought in. Now, one of the important things to note here is that many people now have multiple reporting obligations. So if you're an airline, you might have an obligation under the NIST directive in the UK or Europe to report to the air regulator, and that might sit alongside your obligations to report to a data protection regulator. And in this case, this was similar. the law firm had an obligation to report the matter to the Solicitors Regulation Authority, the body that regulates us in England and Wales, and they complied with that SRA reporting obligation. But they took longer to tell the data regulator, the ICO. And as regular listeners will know, you've generally got 72 hours to report that breach to the ICO. And whilst they'd reported to the SRA in time, they didn't tell the ICO at the same time. And in fact, they were on day 12 rather than day 3. So the ICO decided that they would investigate. And it's important to note that there is a sort of understanding between the SRA and the ICO, and between the ICO and the FCA, if you're a financially regulated entity. But both of them have got their own fining powers. And we've seen in previous cases like Andrew Crossley, ACS Law, that there have been parallel investigations by Bar as well as by the Data Protection Authority. And so we don't know yet what the SRA's findings are, but we do know that the ICO said that the law firm didn't have a suitable contract in place with its provider, and as a result, the security responsibilities weren't sufficiently well designed. The law firm didn't have multi-factor authentication, often called MFA, in place for the affected email accounts. And the law firm effectively said that its contractors hadn't suggested MFA. Now, obviously, there's lots of press about these type of attacks, and I think MFA is almost basic for most law firms. If you're in any organization that's handling sensitive personal data, you haven't got MFA in place, now's the time to think of that. And by the way, if you haven't got MFA in place, that might well be enough to invalidate any cybersecurity policy you've got. And then in common with an earlier case that we've seen involving a law firm, the Tuckers case, the law firm here started to the accreditation process with the UK National Cyber Security Centre's Cyber Essentials scheme, but it didn't complete that process. And the ICO was also concerned about this as well. What did the ICO conclude? They said, obviously, that there had been failings in the systems that were in place at that law firm, and they hadn't met their responsibilities under GDPR. They did the fact that the law firm had mobilized a response team pretty quickly. They had reached out to the affected individuals. They had commissioned a third-party cybersecurity firm to report the incident. They had looked at remedial measures, and they had made all of the law firm's clients whole almost immediately. So the attack took place on the 11th of January, and they paid the stolen money to all of their clients on the 3rd of February. So they were very quick out of the blocks in making clients whole. And the ICO liked that as well. And as a result of all of that, they decided that it was appropriate to give them an official reprimand and not a fine. But they also gave some recommendations for future conduct from the law firm, which are obviously useful, not just to law firms, but to anybody handling personal data. So amongst those recommendations were that the organization does a regular review of user privileges and has in place as well. And why that's important is often the bad guys will get into one account, and if they've got the user privileges, they'll move across to other accounts. And obviously, if they've got things like admin rights, then they can do more damage. The ICO is saying you've got to review who has access to what and make sure that people have the minimum access levels for their role. They also said that a separate and formal password policy should be considered. Now, again, this is contrary to the sort of misinformed rumor mill. I think often people say, oh, passwords have to be always alphanumeric and you have to change them every month and you have to have a capital letter and a special character. That's the olden days. As a general rule, that isn't in accordance with current guidance, and the ICO referred to the NCSE guidance on passwords, which the ICO has highlighted in the past, which says things like forcing people to rotate passwords actually decreases your security rather than increasing it. They also said that the law firm had to implement measures to reduce the risk of social engineering attacks. And again, they referred to NCSC guidance on that. They said that they had to deliver data protection training with specific reference to cybersecurity. They had to do that on a regular basis and evaluate the effectiveness of that training. Something dear to my heart, on Tuesday, the Cordry will be having a off-site data protection time because we think it's really important, and we think it's sometimes you have the cut and thrust of the day gets in the way of stuff like that. Face-to-face training, always better than online, always going to get you more credit with regulators. They also said that they had to determine and communicate security requirements to their suppliers. Again, onboarding is very important for many of our clients there, putting process behind that to make sure that they've done due diligence on their suppliers, that they have the appropriate contracts in place. And then lastly, the ICO was suggesting that they do regular assessments of their security controls to make sure that they're fit for purpose. And obviously, I'd say that you ought to also horizon scan as well. What are the new sort of attacks that are happening? Where might you be vulnerable? And what can you do to prevent those attacks taking place? Some might say a fortunate law firm in that they didn't get a specific fine from the ICO. Obviously, the remedial measures suggested will cost money. They're already down on the deal, having to put in place new measures and recompense those clients affected. And a warning lesson, I think, not just for law firms, but for all of us, that it's a big, bad world out there. It's always worse when there are times of conflict in the world. There are clearly big organized crime gangs involved in these type of attacks as well. And we just have to keep mounting and replenishing our defenses to these type of attacks.
Jonathan, what is the best practice now regarding passwords?
Yes, so there's detailed guidance on the NCSC website, and we'll maybe link to that in our notes. But as a general rule, they're encouraging people to think of pass strings, not passwords. And so that should be something that the individual can remember without having to write it down. I can remember back in the day doing a piece of work for a financial institution where I can't remember the exact numbers, but 20-something percent of female staff had Beckham as their password. And some of them would write it on post-it notes and stick it to the terminal. You might want to consider things like password managers. There's obviously been issues with some of those not being as secure as we would like. But as a general rule, they're encouraging pass phrases. So that might be a string of three words together, which are used to access the system, rather than some strange made-up jumble of special characters. So the key is to try and make it memorable for the individual. And the theory is that if you force the rotation every month of passwords, they get progressively weaker because people are choosing passwords that aren't as strong. And they're forced into doing it every month and they resent the process as well. Pick a strong password, stick to it, follow the state-of-the-art guidance when you're setting them. And also watch out for suppliers as well, because sometimes you might want to follow the latest guidance, but your supplier says, yeah, still 8 characters here, still alphanumeric. And again, there's another regulatory case that says you've got to look at password length as well. Obviously, if it's an 8-character password, it's easier to crack than a 26-character password. Be very careful about having some systems just say maximum of 8 characters. You don't want that either.
Jonathan, I'm going to shout out to the Coterie Compliance offsite, but taking a little bit different direction. And that direction is, when I was at Halliburton, we had an annual stand down for safety. And that was once a year, the company had a full day where we talked about safety. And it started with the business unit CEO put us all in an auditorium and gave a 1-hour presentation on safety. And then we would break off into smaller groups. Uh-huh. And that was designed specifically to do what you've said. Time out, think about this for the day. But as a lawyer, I later realized this is brilliant in terms of inevitably when the incident occurs and the lawsuit is filed and they said, safety is not very serious at your company, is it? Yes, it is. And here's what we do in addition to everything else. So that can be a powerful tool both in the moment to get people to break away, to time out, to think about it, but also in terms of the documentation. If a regulator comes knocking or after the incident when they ask, what have you done? So I would commend you guys for that, but also ask people to think about that because it can be as simple as literally for 1 hour, we're going to talk about data privacy or data security.
So, no, that's definitely right. For full transparency, fried chicken may also be involved in our thing on Tuesday. But we've had a real case where this has been a live issue. We had a client that I did go to a production facility and do some data protection training, data security training in the production facility. I said to the client, it'd be good if there was somebody in the organization who'd introduce me and tell people to take this seriously, because much as I've got no equity with these people. To his credit, the chief compliance officer flew in himself, flew across the Atlantic, stood in the works canteen and told everybody that this was critical, that they paid attention, that they understood their responsibilities. We had an hour and a bit with these people in a cinema style screen. They were very engaged. But despite that, we had an incident for them where the regulators were interested in what had gone on. And I was able, in all honesty, to say to the regulator what we'd done, the fact they did take people off the production line. We, did have their attention. I was able to offer the regulator the deck of slides so they could see the content that we'd covered. But the other thing I think that the regulator was really interested in is somebody in the corporation cared enough to fly across the Atlantic to make sure the people were listening. And I'm not going to tell you any more details except to say that we got a case closure on that case a couple of weeks ago. And I'm sure that was highly significant, the fact that the corporation had spent proper money on proper training rather than trying to nickel and dime it by sending some generic online course around that wasn't fit for purpose.
Well, Jonathan, I think that's a fitting end.
Thank you, Tom.
Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored this month by Ethico. Ethico is a leader for compliance champions like yourself with its ethics and compliance optimization system built to turn goals and guidelines into real ROI for your program. For more information and a special white paper, go to ethico.com/CPN. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope you'll subscribe, rate, and review wherever great podcasts are listened to. The award-winning Life with GDPR is a production of the Compliance Podcast Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.